Welcome to B2B Craftworks, a podcast about business writing. Good morning, business writers. For some very strange reason, a lot of B2B writers come into this field assuming they've brought nothing with them. Like they're learning from scratch just because they've never written a white paper before. If this sounds familiar, our guest today, Liz, and I have some really great news for you. Because if you have any working experience at all, you have some niche knowledge that you can bring to B2B writing. So in this episode, we're going to talk to Liz Sheffield, a B2B writer specializing in HR, about her move from the HR field into freelance B2B writing. So Liz, the first thing I want to hear from someone with a lot of experience in this is your honest opinion. What would you say is the best thing and the worst thing about building a writing niche on your career experience?
Thanks, Sarah, and thanks for having me on your show. So the best thing about writing from a place of knowledge is it gives you that confidence, right? You know what you know, and so that makes it easier to write about it. On the flip side, sometimes being an insider can be a disadvantage because you forget people on the other side that they may not have that same understanding, but that's fixable. You can just sort of keep in mind that my readers may not understand everything in the same way that I do. But it also, it is really such a selling point because A, you know, and you're in the know, and you can, if you're writing for clients, they want somebody who is in the know as well.
Yeah. Well, and right off the bat, this is hitting like huge themes that I love, because one of the reasons I'll say it's okay to be a beginner is because you want to translate this really complex information for outsiders. So it's like, it almost helps if you aren't an insider. But if you're an insider, it's also really helpful. So it's more about making whatever you've got going on, like turning that into your advantage, instead of worrying you don't have enough experience or worrying you have too much experience. You just rock what you have.
Exactly. So, yeah. Play off your strengths.
So to warm up a little bit, could you tell us more about your experience, like moving from human resources, which, you know, being in the space, I already forgot to explain that HR means human resources. So how you move from there and into freelancing?
So I first started writing about parenting. I had a young kiddo at home and was sort of writing about parenting to help me figure out what was going on. And then I decided to leave my career in HR because I wanted to have a more flexible job. So I had been working in HR for Starbucks for about 12 years in different capacities. I was in training and development and ethics and compliance, and all of that was under the HR umbrella, as we say. And so I took my sabbatical and looked at how I could start a writing career. And again, was focused on parenting articles, but then realized that was not going to bring in the income that I needed. And finally, it was working through with a mentor, and she said, well, why aren't you writing about HR? She was probably the third person that asked me that, but it was at the right time. And I thought, well, why? She's right. Why am I not writing about HR? And that's when I started. So thanks to Chris Marlowe for asking me that question way back when.
Right. Yeah. And I think that resonates, because a lot of the time writing, we think it needs to come from this passion, because writing is a passion, right, and art, and really cool. So you find that topic that you're passionate about and then go for it. So for me, it was personal finance, and I was doing all the little $10 blog posts on personal finance blogs because I was really interested. But at some point you realize sometimes the most interesting thing isn't the one that's paying the best. So it's like, if you actually want to do this full time, you have to have some other things that you care about more than like that spark.
So exactly. Cool. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was going to share my first career, like I'm a career switcher as well, was as an English teacher. So when I first came into writing, part of me was wondering, like, do I just stick to that learning and development or, you know, training software space? And that, I wouldn't say I did that really specifically. My evolution was a little more random, but, you know, being stuttering, thinking about like what from the education space I could bring into a B2B writing career, was really helpful when I eventually got to work with like Blackboard and interview some of their executives right. for that product that they create for teachers and professors, and how I was on both sides of that table brought some nuance to it.
Exactly. And you actually, that brings up a great point of having the expertise to be able to have those conversations with subject matter experts or people that you're interviewing. It just, that really does add so much to the conversation, because they see you as a, maybe as a peer or just somebody that in the industry and that they can talk freely with. So that's a great point.
Yeah. And I think you can give better compliments too, because you know what they care right. about and what their product does.
Yes.
So when you're helping somebody like on a subject matter expertise call, subject matter expert call, when you're helping talk them through some of the questions that you're asking, you could speak to those positive points and then kind of get the story behind it.
Right.
So that was going to be one of the first tips that I dropped. If you are bringing career experience with you into B2B writing, is to make a list of the different technologies that you use or even heard about in your workplace, because often those are the companies that have this big marketing budget to create blogs and webinars and white papers about their product. And if you have any kind of product knowledge, then you can come into that and say, hey, I've used this in the workplace. I know what your customers are going through and I can write about it from that angle.
Right.
So I wonder, I think for our conversation, we were just going to talk about what stands out about that process of using your in-house experience to move into a niche. So what are your thoughts?
One thing that came to mind was that if some people may be thinking about going into a niche because, starting a new career, I should say, or starting a career as a writer, because they're ready to get out of what they're doing. So there becomes a balance if what you're going to be writing about in your niche is a job that you hated. That, for me at least, that would be a little bit of a red flag. I don't think you have to, you know, like you said, it may not be your end-all be-all passion, but if it's something that you really didn't like, me personally, I wouldn't, I would look for the angle that I do like, because that negativity, you don't want that to come through in what you're writing about.
Yeah, so some like transferable skills for what you did. So like in HR, right. there were so many things under that umbrella that you had a couple options to focus on or avoid.
Right.
Were there any parts that you did want to shy away from that you'd want to share?
Yeah, so that, and I appreciate you saying that, because I think that's another important part, is that especially initially, you don't want to go niche. You don't want to, I always get, you know, niche too narrowly, because then you're going to limit yourself. But that's where like a niche for me, like HR, is actually fairly broad, because there's all these sort of distinct competencies, if you will, or areas of HR. So, you know, learning and development was natural for me, because that was what I primarily was doing for so long, and I loved it. And I'm the weirdo who loves ethics and compliance too. So that's nice. A natural. Performance management is another area that I really enjoy. HR tech, that came actually from having been on the inside and worked with a lot of different HR tech and seeing how painful it could be. So kind of wanting to help, explain and help people strategize in a different way about their HR tech, as well as help vendors explain what they do. And so for me, I think the area that I didn't really I tried for a little while was writing about payroll. I'm just at the core, I am not a numbers person. So
yeah.
that it just, you know, it I didn't end up going down that road very far.
Yeah, that blurs more with the accounting and finance side of things.
Yes, yeah. yeah, and it just wasn't a fit. So, and I guess also just looking at within a niche, there's a lot of different brands. And there, you know, you kind of can, as you explore further, you can find out what kinds of brands you want to work with too.
Yeah, and I think lately it's really struck me like why I like B2B writing so much. And it's because it feels like this doesn't sound good, but it feels like victimless marketing, where you're actually helping people who want to buy things find the right thing to buy.
Yes.
You're not manipulating a business buyer into buying a business product, because they're going to take that and do amazing things at their workplace and like solve these problems that are really stressing them out. So the way you said, like, you know, to help a vendor explain what they do and help a buyer like know how to use a product, that feels really good to me when you can help with that process.
Exactly.
So I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's helping. Mm. Yeah.
So let me see. So when you start thinking about establishing yourself, maybe we can keep using the HR niche for an example, but what are some of those tips you have for, you know, spreading your roots into it and kind of seeing what you'd want to write about?
Yeah, so I sort of think about it with five different things, right? You want to just keep reading in that niche. So for me with HR, I was reading a lot from the Society for Human Resource Management. I was reading a lot of blogs. Reading other Harvard Business Review, just staying up and current with periodicals. There's an old word, but content from that industry or that niche. And then I really, right from the get-go, I got active on social media and was trying to find other writers in my niche, but also companies that are, you know, actually prospects and thought leaders, and just looking at the conversation about the niche.
Yeah. And I want to interrupt to point out how easy all of this is, because a lot of people, when we say get active on social media, they're like, create an editorial calendar and have deep thoughts share your blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, you literally, if you want to get fancy, you can make an RSS feed and have it show up easily to you.
Right.
You literally just kind of click and scroll and check things out and follow. And like, that's as simple as it can be, dipping your toes into a new niche.
Yeah, good point. It does not have to be complex. I mean, it can be, hey, I'm going to spend 15 minutes, 30 minutes a day on Twitter following, you know, a relevant hashtag and see what people are saying. So, yeah.
Yeah, just find the most interesting person in that space. Right. And like, that's going to open your eyes to how companies are marketing stuff.
Right.
And then based on that behavior, it's almost like Twitter and LinkedIn are going to feed you potential companies, because your ad feed, like on those platforms, is going to start having relevant content in those areas.
So right.
It's like, once I started getting more into like original research, suddenly I was seeing ads for data visualization and different softwares that do that. And it's like, hey, I see people who are marketing. Perhaps they need a writer. So it's like, it piles up.
Which that just kind of brings another point. Like, you just have to be open and aware and kind of looking for what signals you're getting, you know, to kind of be able to flex as those come in. And I, one of my very first clients who I still write for today, I followed them on Twitter because I thought, oh gosh, they're doing exactly, you know, I would love to write for them. And I kid you not, within 10 minutes, their editor sent me a direct message and said, hey, yes, I know. It's like,
that's so cool.
it's a unicorns and rainbow story, but I love it. Yeah. And I would say that my, you know, not to get down in the weeds, but my tagline in my Twitter handle is very specific to my niche. Mm-hmm. And so that editor saw that and was like, oh, she does what we need. So anyway, sorry, off track there a little, but
I love it.
Yeah. But that actually is the next thing, is like, you know, contacting. Once you get comfortable, you're reading, you're, you know, out there on social media, then you just need to contact some people. You know, it's maybe feels scary, but you don't have to say, hey, I want to write for you. You could just have those conversations. And that's a, you know, just build up your network, I would say.
And I wonder, just based on a conversation I had with another writer the other day, I think there can be some anxiety about reaching out. Like, if you don't feel like you're ready, or you don't feel like your portfolio is ready, what kind of pressure do you think we should put on ourselves before we reach out to people? That was a loaded question.
Right. pressure. I'm thinking of that song.
But how much pressure should we feel?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I have to think about that. Like, you know, you don't want to be making yourself sick, obviously, but it's like that. You know, when you're, well, if you were like me in high school, I just dreaded having to get up there and give a presentation. But, you know, once I did it, it was okay. And I survived. So, you know, you don't have to, like, I would say a little pressure is fine. Like, that's what's going to motivate you. Some people, you know, if it's not what's going to motivate you, then maybe you find something else that's going to inspire you. But the bottom line is you have to be willing to make that, that leap. To reach out, because aside from that story I just said, well, I was reaching out when I reached out on Twitter, but some people will come knocking at your door, but you're going to be more successful if you're the one that knocks, because that makes you stand out. Does that make sense?
It does. It was a leading question, because I don't think you should feel any pressure. I really like the Ask a Manager blog. I think you read that too.
Yeah.
And how she says, whenever you're applying for jobs, this is similar to a freelance situation, but you just send it out and then forget it ever happened and just move on. And you really, I think you have to get to that place instead of building up this potential client in your mind and like thinking of how great it'll be and, you know, how much they're going to evaluate you and stuff like that. You just kind of send it and then it's out there. And
totally.
And it might not, and then you just keep going.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because I was thinking of like the pressure to act from, you know, but really like the best thing you could do for yourself is have zero expectations of what somebody is going to return. Because, we have no control over that. So what we can control is taking action, send it, and then, as you said, let it go.
Yeah.
It will not break into a frozen song.
Yeah, you're right. I was getting away from the pressure part, but I think your story earlier, keeping in mind that the people on the other side of this table, they want to find people like you, and they need help from people like you, because they do not have the time to sit down and write, you know, 13 blog posts a month. They want to find somebody who can help them do that and be responsible. So the pressure of putting your name in there for that opportunity is, it doesn't really exist. It's just seeing if you're a good fit or not.
Yeah. And goes back to what you were saying about helping. Like, you are helping them, because maybe they need somebody right now, maybe they don't, but by raising your hand, so to speak, and showing them that you're around helps them. And that they can, so another thing I think is helpful for going in specifically into a niche is looking for industry organizations. And you probably, if you are already working, have a career in one area, you know what all of those are. So I would stay connected with those.
Conferences, I would add to that. Any conferences.
Yeah. Those have been, both have really helped me. Going to meetings, going to conferences. And, you know, being a member also shows those marketers looking for a writer, oh, this person is serious about this industry. So.
And that's another... it feels like a secret client finding opportunity. Just going to the vendor expo of a conference, because those are all companies that have paid thousands of dollars to be there. So you know they have a really active marketing budget, and they're really dialed into whoever their target audience is. So if you live near a hub like DC, Boston, just whatever the big city is in your state or country, just check out what organizations are coming and see if there's any overlap with your niche or experience.
Yeah. Vegas is another place. Conference Central. And I would just stay there too. It's a good, you can also look at conference websites, and they list vendors.
Yes.
So if you can't go, you can at least look at that list.
I'm having flashbacks of the Sherm vendor list, and it's like 600 people. And I went through that thing one by one and made a spreadsheet and found the emails for everybody.
Right? Yes. Yeah, a treasure trove. And I was just thinking, like, it's not like I went out and did all of these things the day that I decided to write about HR, right? Like, if anyone's out there listening thinking they have to jump in and, you know, join an industry organization and get on Twitter and read everything right away. You don't have to. It just kind of builds, I would say, and, you know, start mm-hmm. with one thing, which for a long time, I wondered if I should get certified. So there's a couple different HR certifications.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So I've been at this now since 2012. So that's 8 years. And almost 2 years ago, I finally decided to get certified with a SHRM certification. So I'm a SHRM certified professional in HR.
And so to be clear, is that a certification you had while you were in-house?
Or
you
no.
got that for the first time out? Okay, cool.
Yeah. And I, you know, like I said, I thought about it for a long time and I asked some clients actually, I said, hey, would this make a difference to you if I had this certification? And it was 50-50. Some said, no, we don't care. We love you for your writing. And others said, well, yeah, that's kind of that's a great thing to have. So I decided to finally go for it, studied and, had to go into a testing center. It was a big process.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you, looking back, can you see any like similarities between the 50-50? Did it seem like the people who did care were more in the techie world, or like were there any similarities there? Because I wonder if like a startup would care more because that's going to lend authority to what they're writing, you know?
Right.
But maybe not.
The people that cared more were the ones who are delivering HR services. So HR consultants.
Yes.
Right. And
sense.
Yeah. And so they are really providing HR advice, consultation. They themselves are HR experts, whereas other people who are selling a service that helps HR with a system or a product, they were a little bit less inclined to think that that mattered.
That is so interesting to me.
That's a great question.
It reminds me of on Twitter, we were talking about how much writers charge for things. And there's this scale. And Josh Burnoff said, a well-paid writer is an analyst. Because we were talking about what kind of peaks a writer's salary towards that 90 or 100,000 range when you're in-house.
Right.
And it's like what you're talking about kind of has some ripples that overlap with that, where when people want you for your actual expertise and then you happen to be an excellent writer on the side, like how that kind of changes what you do. And that's really interesting.
That, yeah, I'm writing that down.
Yeah, because it seems like in some ways, if you, even like you as a writer, if you wanted to position yourself more as an HR consultant who writes, like when you have the qualifications for the certification, then you're better positioned to do that.
Right.
I don't know. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And ultimately that was what I just thought. This is something that can't hurt to have it. Right. Mm-hmm. and it was kind of good for me, going back, you know, like that, was another, way for me to feel like an expert.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's neat too. I looked into getting that, but apparently you have to actually have HR experience to get it.
Oh,
so it's good. But you have to have like a couple hundred hours of actually being
right.
in a role like that. And so for me, that was not an option. So I think it does distinguish you when there are requirements like that, that you can call out and show why it's much harder to get. Whereas I very quickly let my teaching license lapse because that did not have anything to do with what I was writing. That was an easy choice for me that the experience I brought with a master's in teaching wasn't helpful to what I was doing. But perhaps if I had gone that like education analyst, education software route, maybe that would have been something I chose to keep. But
right.
I didn't.
Or writing in academia or for, you know, institutions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so cool. It's good stuff to look at.
Yeah. So when I look more, what we wanted to talk about, do you have thoughts on, maybe we could come back to you know, deciding if something would be a good niche for you. So say we're scrolling through Harvard Business Review, we seem to keep hovering around these performance management articles. So there's something there, but you know, how would, maybe we can map out what somebody would do once they see a potential niche that, that could be fun to write in.
So I would like do a dry run, right? For your,
yeah.
see how it feels to write that kind of content. Give yourself an assignment, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, like, and then, you know, you can always, it always helps to ask somebody like, hey, how does this read to you? And then, you know, I think I started a parenting blog when I was trying that niche on.
Cool.
Niche, sorry. You know, and I, like I said, I loved it, but those 8 followers weren't going to end up being an income provider for me and my family. But so, you know, you can always start a blog and see how that, it, because that, if you're going to be writing about this topic all the time, it, mm-hmm. it should feel pretty good to get in there and write about it in your blog. And I do have an HR blog, and I love that too. So that, that was a sign, you know, I have my fun stuff that I write for my own HR blog. And then it kind of helps inspire me for my client content too.
Yeah. And I want to highlight again how easy that is. So like you find a topic you like, and then you can make up an assignment for yourself that is as simple as what is performance management?
Exactly.
5 things HR companies need to know about performance management. And then just see if you can take all this stuff you've been reading and just organize it into something original about the topic. And that's really as simple as it needs to be to show you if that's something you could be excited about, or even a clip to put on your website in the form of a blog post.
Right. Yeah. Can I message this in a coherent way? And you know, and maybe that first thing that you write is not going to be perfect, but that can give you, like you said, an idea if it's a passion, and then you know where you want to dig in to get better at writing it too. And then I think we've already, you know, touched on this a little bit, connecting with people who are in this network, or either as a writer or as somebody who hires writers, and just because those are ultimately going to be the people with whom you work. So you want to have a good feeling about that too, right? It's not only just the niche, but it's who's in that niche, I would say.
And that might be the biggest secret that I have. I totally picked HR because I love the people in it.
Right.
And I feel like I can communicate with them really easily. They're so just kind, like on the phone, like when I'm interviewing experts in the field, when I'm talking with potential clients, like they're just the most organized and aware people within an organization. And like right away, that it was just like, when you make that list of who are my top 5 clients and how do I repeat the process of getting them, it was just always HR. So it's like, right. Just keep doing more of that. And then
right.
I got deeper in.
Yeah, that's a sign. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're somebody that really wants to be talking with people who are brilliant and are really techie, you know, then that's a thing to listen to as well. Or, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to be learning about like the, how things work, you know, pay attention to that too.
Yeah. And I want to ask a little more, you said, you know, having HR content on your blog, because I think there's always an argument for and against inbound marketing for writers. And I've almost always fallen on the anti-inbound marketing. Like if you're writing, you should be getting paid for it. So I'm not going to have a blog on my website. I'm not getting paid for it. But, big but, when you niche and you kind of move towards that analyst role where people might be spending a lot more on you and they want to see your expertise, I think that's a very good reason to start having like content in that niche on your blog for sure.
Yeah.
So how did maybe you reach that decision?
Well,
writing on your blog.
I'm glad you mentioned this because it was difficult for me. It took me quite a while with that blog. So I have sort of, it's a hybrid. I am showcasing I know about HR, but I also am showcasing I know about writing about HR. Ooh. Because initially I was just showcasing I know HR, and I had someone say, so really, are you writing for people in HR, or are you writing for companies?
Interesting.
And that was just the biggest aha, because I took a big left turn and changed my direction with that, because I looked at it through that lens and I was like, yeah, this is speaking to everybody in an HR department of a huge corporation, and they're not the people that I'm working with.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's that cool 2 degrees thing, because like that example is 1 degree. You're talking to the potential customer, but
right.
When we're B2B writing, like it's supposed to be an extra degree away from that customer. So we're not talking to people in HR. We're talking to the
right.
people who sell to people in HR.
That's exactly.
Crazy.
Yeah. So once and that just made total sense, and
yeah.
It's been much more successful. Oh, surprise.
Yeah. But if you hadn't been writing that, you know, maybe that wouldn't have occurred to you, and then maybe your blog wouldn't have happened. So
right.
That's pretty
yeah.
cool.
And it is the blog. The thing about the blog is that at a minimum, I think it can show, especially when you're starting, oh, this person knows how to write. They're an engaging writer. They're a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have samples elsewhere that you can send to someone. So it can help with that.
For someone wondering, I think a big reason people hesitate to niche is because they think it'll limit the people they can work for. Has that been your experience, or what do you think about holding back from picking a topic because you don't want to shut down any options?
Yeah, so I hear that a lot too. And I think that's a valid concern. You don't want to get too specific and then work yourself out of other opportunities. And that's where having the right niche that is expansive enough is really key. I didn't start out saying I only write about HR tech, for example, though that's actually a pretty big niche because there's so much out there. I just had that broad scope of HR, or I didn't say I'll only write about training and development. Pick a niche that has enough vertical options that you won't be too limited.
Yeah. And so if you're bringing a niche with you from a job, you might already know what those verticals are. But if you don't, a funny thing is that a lot of the websites out there about these topics have organized themselves into very handy categories for you to go and find out what those verticals are. So
true.
If you end up on Harvard Business Review, you know, you can go to that about or topics and then see
mm-hmm.
this huge spread of leadership and business topics. Really any blog in a niche is just for their SEO. They've organized themselves on their sitemap into those verticals. So that can give you an idea of just how many topics are in
right.
a niche to see if it's going to be expansive enough.
Right.
Whenever you are in a niche and you have that nice umbrella of topics, how would you handle, you know, writing for competing brands?
Great question. A lot of people are nervous about that, right? Honestly, you're developing these relationships with clients and you don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers, and there's mm-hmm. competitors out there. So some people are really specific when you first sign a contract with them that, you know, you mm-hmm. will only develop content for us in this space. So you have to make the decision at that point. When it's come up for me, somebody reach out about a topic that I already was writing for somebody. And I just asked them, I said, you know, this competitor reached out and are you okay if I write for them? Our relationship matters, you know, and they were really cool about it. They said, no, you're fine. You know, I don't think you're going to, we know you're not going to divulge any secrets. And so long as, you know, you're developing unique content for us, that's all we care about. So it, I guess that's sort of, you know, it's, if you do niche, it's going to come up. And I kind of deal with it on a case by case basis. You know, it might be a situation where someone says it, like that client could have said, no, we don't want you to write for them. And I probably would have said, okay, because I adore this client and, you know, they pay well, but that's also an opportunity when you have that to say, well, is, you know, to evaluate clients and where the best opportunities are for you.
Yeah. And I, it's probably worth noting there's two kinds of non-compete, especially if you're working with agencies. So a really direct one is going to be like two brands in the exact same space who might hire you for their space. And they don't want those secrets going back and forth. And then there's that agency relationship where they're letting you work with their client. So they don't want you to go and leave with that client.
Yeah.
So that's good another point. Fun thing to worry about. And I've always handled that the same way, is if it's not explicitly in a contract, I reach out to whoever I have the relationship and say, like, hey, I really want to go for this. Is there any problem with that?
And then right.
Often there has been, so I have to choose, but it's usually really easy to choose because I've been able to have really good relationships.
Right.
And something's been so crazy, especially in the HR space, is realizing just how many of these companies work together, even in the same niche. Like they'll share content, repurpose content, and everybody knows what's happening. I feel like in the past year that's happened two or three times, and I was really surprised to see
Interesting,
that.
Interesting, so yeah.
I wouldn't automatically assume that once you niche, there's going to be competition all the time, because a lot of brands, maybe the way of doing business is changing enough that people are more willing to share ideas, or, you know, even people who are in the same industry might be approaching different size businesses in that industry. So a small and medium company might share content with an enterprise company.
Right.
Stuff like that. So just don't assume that you know, because sometimes we don't.
Right. And don't just automatically say no because you're afraid of that competition, or, you know, what the client might say, you know, that sometimes we shut a door that doesn't have to be shut. So.
Yeah. And I feel like you were just about to say this too, that if you do have to turn down something, that's a great lead to pass on to somebody else in your space. And then you're building your relationships that way. So I know, especially in HR, people are very generous with that kind of stuff. What advice you might have for someone who's in a really niche space right now? The example this person gave was data analytics, and they want to break out and do a freelance project, but they just kind of, you know, they don't know where to start.
So if you are in a career and you're in a full-time, whatever, part-time job in a niche, essentially, I would start out with testing yourself to see how much you like writing about it. You know, give yourself that assignment, if you will, and you know, be your own editor. I'd like this many words. I'd like, you know, it on this topic. And it can be a really simple topic, as we've said. It doesn't have to be complex.
Yeah, I love that. And even beyond being your own editor, be your own client. Like for this space for data analytics, if you wanted to make your own research report, like go do that. Like sign up for a SurveyMonkey account, spend $300 or $400. Like they'll give you a panel that you can ask. Like you can design a thing of questions. You can get those results and segment them and analyze them and show off all your stuff. And then you have this original project with no strings attached. Like you don't need to get anybody's permission. You can find a designer. I don't know, Fiverr isn't great for the people, but use a really fancy like Google Slides or PowerPoint presentation and make it a little PDF. And then you've got a beautiful product that has shown you whether or not you want to do this.
And you can also take a gander at those people, the vendors, the marketers that are reaching out to you as a person in that space, or to your boss or whomever.
Nice.
And look at their content and, you know, is this something that you would like to create? And you can use that as a jumping off point for yourself, but it just also gives you an idea of what's out there and what?
Well, this is where I don't feel as awkward saying thank you, because the information here has been super helpful. So I hope anybody interested in niching is going to pursue that. But more importantly, if the HR part of this stood out to you, Liz is building something really cool. So you want to go to LizSheffield.com, which will, we have show notes so that it'll be in that. And if you sign up to her newsletter, she's going to have some stuff coming out for HR writers, whether you're in the HR space now and full-time and just kind of thinking maybe a little bit a couple years down the line and you might want to start writing, or maybe you love HR and you're already writing and you want to do more of it, she's going to be a really good person to follow for that. Well, thank you, Liz, so much for your time, and thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll be back next month with another B2B Craftworks. Until then, find us anywhere you get too many social media updates like Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.